Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, July 11th, 2024. Marfa Postmaster outlines how to submit addresses to vendors for package. By Rob D'Amico, rob@bigbendsentinel.com. Marfa. In May, several Marfans took to social media to complain that the local post office was sending packages back to vendors, claiming labels lacked adequate information needed to tie a resident's street address to their post office box where they receive the majority of their mail. The issues arose when a new postmaster, Giselle Villanueva, took over and began enforcing the immediate return of packages with no post office box numbers on the shipping label. I know what y'all have done before in the past is just the name and the physical address, and y'all are supposed to get it, Villarreal said. Now, what we're trying to enforce are P.O. boxes, which means adding that P.O. box number onto those packages you're ordering. Villanueva said the problem was that Marfa's longtime local employees would know just about everyone in town and where to put the packages. Temp clerks and herself as the new postmaster did not know. And postal regulations required a P.O. box in the address. So, add the P.O. box on an address. Sounds easy, right? Not so, according to several people on Facebook, who said many vendors don't deliver to post office boxes, and others change addresses customers input to try and match them with United States Postal Service's data, which ends up nixing P.O. box numbers the customers have tried to insert. A workaround offered by the previous postmaster was adding the box number after a hyphen in the zip code. While that worked for some, others found that the vendors changed their box number to another four-digit number, trying to match USPS data. Villanueva, who worked at the Presidio post office for nearly a decade before coming to Marfa, offered the following advice. 1. If you can use a P.O. box to deliver to, then use it. 2. If you can't, go ahead and add the box number after your name, like Jane Doe 1234. 3. Also, add the number after your street address with a hashtag like 222 Spruce Street, hashtag 1234. 4. If you can track your package or see the shipping information or a label and you see an error, contact the vendor to try it and change it. You can also let the post office know of the error and discuss how to make sure the package has the best chance to get to you if it's already been sent. Putting the box number after your name has the best chance of not being altered by a vendor, Villanueva said. The auto-generated addresses and everything aren't going to mess with your name, she said. One Facebook user said even that technique failed, but many others reported it working. Villanueva said she can sometimes glean additional information from her system to see how a package was addressed, such as photographs of the label, but that almost all of the time what she sees is what the customer sees when tracking a package. Despite calls for USPS complaints, investigations, and petitions from Marfans on Facebook, the uproar seems to have subsided, and Villanueva said she hopes everyone hears about and follows the new address routine. There's still a few kinks here and there, she said. There's still a few packages that do get returned. We've had some growing pains, but I think everything has gotten a lot better. Illustration by Crow Crumbs. Some Tri-County residents are fed up with what they are claiming are mispriced items at Lowe's Markets. The allegations of overcharging led the company to audit its Marfa store this week. Lowe's Markets launches audit on Marfa store following overcharge allegations. By Mary Cantrell, MKCANTRELL at BigBenSentinel.com. Tri-County. Lowe's Markets, a supermarket chain operating stores in Marfa, Alpine, Fort Davis, and Presidio, came under fire recently when several citizens took to local social media pages to express outrage over what they said were repeated instances of overcharging at the stores. Similar complaints have been circulating for some time, but seemed to spike after a few residents went public with their concerns. A post in a Facebook group for Alpine citizens July 3rd included an image of a receipt where the purchaser outlined several items for which they believed they'd been overcharged, totaling nearly $25. They claimed there were even a couple of items on the receipt they did not even purchase. The post garnered around 150 comments, with many sharing similar experiences. Those with complaints claim that there are regular instances where prices advertised on the shelves do not match what gets rung up at the checkout counter. The allegations led Lowe's to conduct an audit to assess pricing accuracy at the Marfa location on Tuesday. Marfa resident Stella Fuentes posted to a local Marfa Facebook page July 6th to explain she'd been overcharged for a box of cereal, not her first time noticing she'd be overcharged, she told the Big Ben Sentinel, and that store management was not apologetic about the error when she'd asked them to correct it. She said grocery prices are already high, considering the often low quality of the products. But then to go to the register and get charged a couple more bucks for this and a couple more bucks for that, it's a slap in the face, Fuentes said. It's no surprise that supposed overcharges are met with exasperation, considering food prices are already at record highs. U.S. food prices rose 25% from 2019 to 2023, according to the United States Department of Agriculture, and rural residents are often paying even more for their groceries compared to city dwellers. Fuentes said when Lowe's took over what was previously run as Porter's this past December, she was optimistic the store might improve. She said she took cue from the newly paved parking lot that, ideally, fresher produce and better products were coming. But that has not been the case, she said, and the repeated instances of overcharging she's experienced have led her to want to boycott the store, but she knows her options are limited. It's a food desert, and these corporations know that, Fuentes said. We don't have a choice. She said many people have reached out to her to share their concerns with the store in the wake of her social media post. Fuentes said at this point she would like to know exactly what is causing the price discrepancies and what she can expect from Lowe's moving forward. She said her attempts to talk to Lowe's employees about the issue have left her further disenchanted with her local grocery store. The customer service is horrific. They're not apologizing. They're not acknowledging. They're annoyed that you're calling them out, Fuentes said. There's no sense of, I'm sorry, we can do better. That's where I point at Lowe's Corporation saying, we need to train our management better. We need to come in and see what's going on. For its part, when Lowe's was made aware of the citizen complaints via an interview request with the Sentinel, Chief Operating Officer Alan Buxkemper called for the Marfa store to be audited the very next day. They will scan every item in the store, and if there's a price discrepancy, they will fix it. Bucks Kemper said. Bucks Kemper did not admit fault on behalf of the Marfa Lows, but pointed to his swiftness of action to demonstrate the company's responsiveness. We're new to the community, and are we perfect? Absolutely not. But we sure work hard trying to be perfect, Bucks Kemper said. If I get a complaint today, and I am taking action to handle it tomorrow, I bet there are very few businesses in town that would be that immediate. He declined to go into specifics about what might be causing incorrect pricing while the results of the store audit are pending. If there's a specific reason, my auditors will know. Okay, this is what happened. And then we can put a plan together to fix whatever happened. He said before being contacted by the Sentinel, the company had not been made aware of a single complaint about the issue, but Lowe's takes the accusations of incorrect pricing very seriously. We work super hard to make sure that we have fair, adequate, and accurate pricing, Bucks Kemper said. This isn't something that we get complaints on, about our pricing not being right. He denied allegations from concerned citizens that the overcharges were intentional and constituted theft. We definitely don't intentionally have wrong pricing on our shelves. That's not the way we operate, Bucks Kemper said. Bucks Kemper said the company was only planning on auditing the Marfa store at the moment because he was unaware of any other stores in the Tri-County area that may also have price discrepancies. When asked to comment on citizens' complaints that local management has supposedly been rude to customers and was not taking the issue seriously, he said he was unaware of their behavior. I would sure hope that my management team there would respond appropriately to people, but I can't say that. I just don't know how they would react, Bucks Kemper said. Lawyer and Presidio County Attorney-elect Blair Park was quick to comment on local social media posts to offer helpful tips about how citizens can contact Lowe's directly with their complaints and even take their concerns to the next level, reporting a misrepresentation of price to the Texas Department of Agriculture and filing a consumer complaint with the Texas Attorney General's office. Park wrote, it was a major and illegal problem that had landed major stores, including Whole Foods, in hot water in the past. In 2014, the Austin-based chain entered into a settlement agreement to pay $800,000 in civil penalties to multiple cities in California after a statewide investigation found widespread pricing violations at their stores. She told the Sentinel, "It is important for citizens to provide copies of receipts and go through the formal channels to report the issue. That way complaints stack up, increasing the likelihood Lowe's will take local concerns seriously. You can't expect the Texas Department of Agriculture or the Attorney General to know about these problems unless you tell them," Park said. "So if everyone here is just complaining on Marfa Group on Facebook, but not complaining to the right people, then we're all just going to be complaining to each other and nothing will happen. If the Texas Department of Agriculture finds a store in violation of incorrect pricing, they can levy fines up to $500 per violation per day." Park said even $1 to $3 overcharges could be significant increases in terms of percentage, depending on the price of the item, and small overcharges could stack up over time. "It's a big problem, $1 here and there, but if it happens 5 times on a receipt, and you're doing this all year long, that's a lot of money," Park said. When she can, Fuentes uses the self-checkout, she said, to double-check prices on items she's purchasing. But for many who utilize the traditional checkout counter, incorrect prices may only be discovered after the bill has been paid, and even then finding out if you overpaid requires a knowledge of the advertised price. Park said she doesn't think the onus of ensuring you are paying the right price for your grocery items should be on the customers. She said she'd prefer to shop locally, but the quality of produce and meat at Lowe's and a feeling she's being duped on prices has led her to pursue food delivery services like HelloFresh and Imperfect Foods. It'd be one thing if we had horrible quality and it was a cheap price, like, well, we're a small town, you do what you can. But to give horrible quality and then charge outrageous prices for it, it's just not cool, Park said. Alpine firefighter arrested for arson following recent brush fires. Brewster officials refused to release public records. Don't address speculation on downtown fire. By Rob D'Amico. Rob at BigBenSentinel.com. Alpine. Brewster County Sheriff's deputies arrested an Alpine volunteer firefighter and longtime emergency medical technician Friday, charging him in connection to a spate of recent brush fires in the Alpine area. David Matthew Neat, 44, of Alpine, was arraigned Saturday on 20 counts of arson, a second-degree felony, said Brewster County Sheriff Ronnie Dodson. During the course of the fire investigations, several incendiary devices were located, the sheriff's office said in a Facebook post on the arrest. The post noted that Neat is an Alpine volunteer firefighter and crew member of the First Response EMS, which provides non-emergency medical transport. The post also noted work with the Texas A&M Forest Service on the case and commended Deputy Hector Holguin for his hard work and dedication to this investigation. We've been investigating this for a good while, Dodson told the Big Bend Sentinel Saturday. These fires have been going on for over 2 years. We just started getting clues and using our new technology to figure it out. Dodson said 6 or 7 fires are likely connected to the arson. The sheriff said the case is still under investigation, and he declined to discuss specifics of how the suspect was identified and what new technology was deployed. Neat's Facebook page lists past work experience, including emergency services at Terlingua Fire and EMS from October 2020 to September 2021, as well as various positions in emergency medical services agencies and companies around Texas. He also lists work in civil affairs at the Texas Military Department. Neat was being held in the Brewster County Jail Wednesday morning on a $300,000 bond. The Big Bend Sentinel on Saturday requested documents in the case, affidavits for probable cause for Neat's arrest warrant, and any search warrant affidavits if they existed. Sheriff Dodson and County Judge Greg Hennington initially agreed to release the documents, which are court records and considered public information under Texas law. However, in an about-face Monday morning, Brewster County Chief Deputy Ryan Skelton told the Sentinel that the sheriff's office would not be releasing any more information than what it posted on its Facebook page early Saturday morning. After speaking with Hennington on Saturday and texting on Monday, he initially agreed to share the affidavits. However, he stopped replying to requests for comment and by press time had not shared the affidavits. Per the Texas Code of Criminal Procedure, affidavits are to be available for public inspection. Affidavits offer additional detail on arrests. Former Alpine Fire Chief Andrew Pierce, who had served in the role until June 11th, said he found out about the arrest right when it happened. I was surprised it's one of my people because of how close-knit we keep the department and how we focus on building each other up and making it a place to go, he said. But at the same time, I'm ready to cooperate fully with the law enforcement side of things and provide them with anything they need to fully prosecute this case. Well, many Alpine residents took to social media to speculate on whether these arson fires were connected to the massive structure fire downtown on Holland Avenue. Officials have not indicated in any way that they are related. Sheriff Dodson, Chief Deputy Skelton, County Judge Hennington, and Justice of the Peace Susanna Gonzalez did not answer the question of whether any evidence was found connecting Neat to the downtown fire. When reached by phone on Tuesday, Gonzalez said that she signed the warrant based on the probable cause affidavit on Saturday and also magistrated Neat. However, she said she didn't retain copies of any of the documents and was unaware that it was her responsibility to keep them in her office to immediately be made available for public inspection. "I'm not trying to hide anything," she said. "I just don't think I have copies." Gonzalez did not respond to a follow-up request for the documents or comment on Wednesday. By Wednesday, Chief Deputy Skelton made it clear that he would not be releasing the documents because he said it could compromise the case. "We have newly elected JPs that require so much detail in the affidavits that the affidavits and our deputies now have a practice of disclosing so much detail due to these requirements, we are not allowed to simply explain how the elements of the law were met. We are having to disclose investigational details to satisfy the new JPs," Skelton said in an email. "In this instance, the affidavit contains very specific investigation information that did not need to be released to the public, as it would possibly corrupt and taint the case's prosecution, and especially the limited jury pool." Skelton also commented on his release of basic info in the arrest report and jail and bond information, which is a separate provision of Texas law under the Public Information Act. "I was claiming the exception rule, which led to the releasing of basic information as required. I further visited the prosecutors involved, and they concurred with the decision and explicitly instructed me not to release anything further than basic information." District Attorney Ori White's office would be the prosecutor for the Neat case. He did not respond to multiple requests for comment by phone and email on whether he was instructing law enforcement and judges to aid in violating the laws on open records. The Sentinel also contacted a Freedom of Information Foundation Texas attorney, Bill Aylshire, an expert on open record laws, who confirmed that the affidavits are clearly public record with very few exceptions to their release. Brewster County Precinct 1 Justice of the Peace Scott Wasserman agreed and said JPs don't have a choice in the matter and need to keep them available for public inspection. David Matthew Neat Facebook photo. Marfa City Council talks Caulfield Splash Pad, Meeting Agenda Policies, by Mary Cantrell. MKCANTRELL at BigBenSentinel.com. Marfa City Council met Tuesday to discuss the installation of a splash pad at Caulfield Park and policies relating to meeting agenda procedure. All council members were present. Parks Board President Michael Camacho approached council members for approval of the board's chosen contractor, Yosef Ben Yehuda Construction, who will work with vendor Vortex to install a new splash pad for Caulfield Park. Camacho explained that the Parks Board wanted to keep the money local by hiring Ben Yehuda, who also submitted the most affordable bid to complete the project, and agreed to obtain a specific certification required by splash pad vendor Vortex. The project is coming in at around $199,000, Camacho said, but the board had $250,000 budgeted to help cover any unforeseen expenses. The target date for the new water recreation site to be completed is this coming September, but it will not open to the public until spring of 2025, he said. The splash pad is likely to be installed in between the gazebo, which is currently undergoing an expansion, and the playground where the road used to be. The Parks Board plans to recapture the water used to operate the splash pad for irrigating the north side of the park, and plans are underway to hire a landscape architect to help further improve the park next budgetary cycle, Camacho said. The splash pad not only is an amenity for the children and adults and whoever, but it's also going to be the Kickstarter for our irrigation program, Camacho said. Council members showed enthusiasm for the project and voted unanimously to approve the hiring of Ben Yehuda to carry out installation. Council members then discussed whether or not to amend a meeting policy relating to council member sponsorship, the process of a council member placing an item on the meeting agenda for discussion, sometimes on behalf of a citizen or group. Under the current policy, City Manager Mandy Roan, Mayor Manny Baeza, and a single council member can place items on the meeting agenda. Council members considered requiring two council members to sponsor an item in order to get it on a meeting agenda. A potential change was prompted by Council Member Raul Lara, who said he thought requiring two council members to sponsor an agenda item would help council keep a tighter agenda and move on with taking care of business. Council Member Travis Ackerman took issue with the idea, stating he thought it would add a threshold for citizens looking to see items of concern discussed by council, because they would have to find two council members to sponsor them, as opposed to only one. I don't see any reason to change things while adding a barrier for citizen. He asked why it was needed, and if the council was losing a significant amount of time dealing with sponsored items. Roan responded, stating, "We did have a few items that died for lack of a second, died for lack of a motion," and said it was not uncommon for cities to require two council members to sponsor an agenda item. Ackerman expressed concerns about council members violating the Open Meetings Act by talking to one another about agenda items outside of council meetings. Roan said it would not be illegal for council members to approach one another about sponsoring an agenda item. They were just not able to talk in detail. To boot, she said, the city's resolution that details meeting procedure was 17 years old and in need of an update to reflect how meetings were currently run. Council members Eddie Payares and Mark Morrison were neutral on the issue, and in the end, Morrison made the motion to update the resolution and add the two council member sponsorship requirement, subject to later approval by council with any other updates. Ackerman was the only council member that opposed the vote. Colonius appoint representatives for new county utility system board, by Sam Karras. Sam at BigBenSentinel.com. Marfa, on Wednesday, a small group of concerned citizens from the smallest and most remote communities in Presidio County convened for a meeting of the Utility System Board, which aims to address urgent water needs in the communities of Candelaria, Redford, Ruidosa, and Shafter. When the board was formed last fall, it consisted of the county judge and commissioners, but the plan was always to appoint a member from each of the communities. Soon to be Precinct 1 Commissioner Deirdre Heisler will serve as chair for the board approved at yesterday's meeting. Martha Stafford of Shafter, Bianca Tellez of Candelaria, Wicar Codham of Ruidosa, and Charlie Angel of Redford. Las Pampas, a dry colonia located between Presidio and Shafter, doesn't currently have representation, though officials stressed the need to seek out a community member to participate. Over the past few years, the majority of these communities have been plagued by outages and uncertainties. Candelaria has been hit particularly hard. In April, the town's water operator, Roselva Madrid, passed away, leaving no one to check on the system's well, nor to collect payments and check the 50-odd local meters. Shafter is also in a state of limbo. Historically, the community's water has been provided by the nearby silver mine free of charge, but the financial troubles of parent company Arcana Silver and the uncertainty of a potential sale have left the system in the lurch. Without an operator doing all required testing and no chlorinator, the town is under a perpetual boil water notice, with residents questioning whether they'll wake up one morning and not be able to turn on the tap. The county board is distinct from the individual water corporations from each small town that make decisions about system maintenance and funding. Some are more sophisticated than others. County Judge Joe Portillo highlighted the Redford Water Corporation, which he referred to as the most consistently run. Overall, it does very well for itself. Redford Water Corporation Chair Charlie Angel was present at the meeting to offer tips to the other communities. There are around 50 water customers in Redford whose bills go toward the cost of routine system maintenance. The day-to-day operation of the system is the responsibility of Hector Morales, who is perpetually on call in case of an emergency. He and his wife also read meters and collect bills. Angel wasn't sure how well Redford's template would operate in even smaller communities, such as Ruidosa. Redford, a community with quadruple Ruidosa's meters, barely makes a profit. There are also two local certified operators in case something goes wrong. Finding even one can be a challenge. You have to have someone there who cares and is a long-term resident, Angel explained. The new countywide group aims to meet once a month with the goal of strengthening the individual town water corporations and applying for funding to make each community self-sufficient. Officials hope there'll be strength in numbers. No grant is an easy grant, Portillo said.
Leffler.
This is Kay reading
Paul
the Big Ben
Leffler
Sentinel for Thursday, July 3rd, 2024, in Alpine, Texas. Paul was born to Victor and Kaloma Leffler in Kerrville, Texas, on September 13, 1956. Paul grew up in Junction, Texas, learning many life lessons working in the family business, Leffler Motor Company, and on the Leffler Ranch. Upon graduation from Junction High School, Paul followed a family tradition and attended Texas A&M University. Paul married Evelyn Ebby Leffler in Sierra Blanca on June 24, 1978. On a vacation, Paul and Ebby went to Alpine to visit Ebby's brothers who were attending Sil Ross State University. He fell in love with Alpine and told Ebby that if a job ever came open there, he would take it. In 1982, he began working with the Texas General Land Office field headquarters. He enjoyed his career because he got to combine his two favorite activities, looking at range land and talking to people. After retirement, he opened his own land management and real estate appraisal company, Superior Land Services. Paul's dad believed that his son not only needed a good academic education, but he needed to be well-versed in practical life skills. Leffler Motor Company, in the heart of Junction, provided Victor with an opportunity to hire out his strapping young son to those in need of a good, strong back who would work cheap. Paul continued to be an avid learner in life's practical skills by helping friends and learning from them. With the help and expertise of good friends, he built the family home in Alpine. Paul took seriously God's admonition to be good stewards of the land he gave us, and Paul devoted much time to being an active member in the Society for Range Management at both the state and national levels. He served on numerous committees and in several offices. Through the society, he earned a designation as a certified range professional. He enjoyed sharing that knowledge with youth in 4-H and FFA at Range Camp, later Youth Range Workshop. Paul also had a passion for the fire service. He was a member of Alpine Volunteer Fire Department and the Texas State Firemen's and Fire Marshals Association. His quest for knowledge was particularly evident in the fire service, as he became a certified firefighter and was an instructor at the Texas A&M Fire School for over 30 years. He served in various positions in the fire department, including 11 years as fire chief. He believed a well-trained department was essential to protect the lives and property in his beloved Alpine. Paul is survived by his wife, Abby, and their three children, Valerie Reuter, Brian, Lacey Lutz, Brent, and Jason Leffler, Ashley. Six grandchildren, Cody, Avery, and Baron Reuter, and Lindley Keller and Lane Lutz. He is also survived by his sister, Lisa Bynum, sister-in-law, Bonnie Leffler, John, and a host of nieces and nephews. He was preceded in death by his parents and his brother, John. A memorial service in celebration of Paul's life will be held at Alpine Memorial Funeral Home in Alpine, Texas, on July 20, 2024, from 10 a.m. to noon. Funeral services are entrusted to Alpine Memorial Funeral Home. Condolences may be left at www.alpinememorialfuneralhome.com. Pippin. Larry James Pippin, 88, passed away peacefully at home on Wednesday, June 12, 2024. He was born to Bernardina and Butler Pippin on June 15, 1935, in Brownsville, Texas. Larry grew up in Marfa and graduated from Marfa High School. He graduated from Sul Ross State University in 1973 with a Bachelor of Business Administration degree. Larry served in the U.S. Army during the Korean War. Larry served as the Assistant Manager and Director of Finance for the City of Alpine, Texas, from 1973 to 1977. He served as Assistant City Manager, Director of Finance, and City Secretary for the City of Lockhart from 1977 to 1980. Larry was City Manager of Giddings, Texas, from 1980 to 1988. He became City Manager of Pleasanton, Texas, from 1988 to 1999. Larry Pippin was also interim city manager in Pearsall, Poteet, and Karnes City. Larry is survived by his wife of 60 years, Sue, and his children, Bobby, Gloria, Roger, Christy, Kelly, and Dwayne, Carolyn, 11 grandchildren, 19 great-grandchildren, and one great-great-granddaughter. He is also survived by his sister, Cindy Pippin, and many other family members. He was preceded in death by his mother, Bernardina, and stepfather, Chuy Perez, father, Butler Pippin, and stepmother, Maudine Pippin, grandsons, Michael James Pippin, Timothy Pippin, and Angel Pippin, great-grandson, Wyatt Greer, brother, Butler Pippin, sister, Charlene Rasor, in-laws Paul and Hazel Wofford, and many other family members. Larry loved his family above measure and was always there for them. He was a very caring and loving person. He enjoyed bowling, golfing, and traveling. A viewing will be held at Hurley Funeral Home on Wednesday, June 26, 2024, from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m., with a funeral service at 6:30 p.m. On Thursday, June 27, 2024, There will be a graveside service at 11 a.m. at Ridgeway Cemetery, located at 153 Ridgeway Cemetery Road, Page, Texas, 78659.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, June 27th. Sheriff's Office still investigating recent negligent firearm discharge. One suspect still sought. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Ward County Sheriff's deputies are still looking for a suspect who fled the scene after being caught with three other individuals recklessly shooting guns into the air earlier this month. According to Ward County Sheriff's Office Lieutenant Mark Sanchez, quote, on June 2nd, around 2:30 a.m., our dispatch received a 911 call in reference to a homeowner hearing gunshots in the area of 3800 block of South Ida Street, which seemed to be getting closer to the caller's residence, end quote. Another deputy had been patrolling in the area of Boston Street and also heard the gunshots. Quote, the deputy arrived at the location where he suspected the shots were coming from by the loud music and talking he heard. The location was fenced in, and the deputy couldn't see over the fence. He proceeded to stand on a spool outside the fence and witnessed the individual standing in a circle, two with handguns in the air, about to discharge the weapons again, Sanchez said. The deputies gave verbal commands to the individuals, and one of the suspects fled the scene on foot and jumped the fence in the back of the lot. Quote, the other individuals remained on scene, but did not respond to the commands given by the deputy, which led them to believe they did not speak English. One deputy gave commands in Spanish, while the other deputy left to search for the individual who fled, he said. The deputy spotted the individual who fled in the alley, but was unable to locate him. Quote, the other individuals who remained on scene still ignored the deputy's commands and threw the gun into a truck on the lot and went inside the respective RVs, he said. While deputies were setting up a perimeter to search for the suspect who fled, someone grabbed the Glock from the truck and threw it over an adjoining fence line. Deputies detained the three men who remained on scene and were all Mexican nationals, Marco Antonio Garcia Miranda, age 42, Angel Gonzalez Portillo, age 25, and Jesus Alvardo Felix Valdez, age 42. Valdez was subsequently arrested and charged with tampering, fabricating physical evidence with the intent to impair, and has since been released. The other two, one was released to Immigration and Customs Enforcement, and the other was released. Deputies located two AR-15s, a rifle similar to an AK-47, inside a residence on the property, which the search warrant entailed. Deputies were able to obtain surveillance footage from the property and a neighboring property. The investigation is still ongoing, and additional charges are pending. Quote, the disregard for surrounding residents' safety, surrounding property, and not complying with deputies' commands is something the sheriff's office will not tolerate, Patrol Captain Rodolfo Ozuna said. Anyone with information which could help locate the fourth suspect is urged to call the sheriff's office at 432-943-6703. Sand Hills Family Clinic East to undergo expansion. The story was written by Jan Cranfield. The Ward County Commissioners Court met Monday morning at the Ward County Courthouse. After the pledges and invocation, Ward County Judge Greg Holly got the meeting underway with the establishment of a quorum. The commissioners heard from Ward Memorial Hospital Administrator and CEO Leticia Rodriguez on the progress of the Sand Hills East expansion project. Quote, TXE Construction out of Odessa submitted the lowest bid of $227,000. That's for the addition of 3 exam rooms, Rodriguez said. The project involves closing in an existing courtyard at the clinic, which will create the space for 3 exam rooms and/or offices. Quote, TXE has done work for Medical Center Hospital in Odessa, as well as Odessa Regional Medical Center in Odessa, Rodriguez told the court. The TXE bid will break down into 15 project areas, demo phase at $22,000, concrete for $14,000, new metal roof total $16,000, plumbing for $21,000, electrical at $28,000, framing total $15,000, drywall total $11,000, tape and texture $10,000, HVAC for $8,900, paint at $13,700, suspended ceiling total $19,000, cabinets for $8,600, doors and hardware total $15,500, flooring for $15,600, and miscellaneous contingency $5,000. The project completion schedule begins within 15 days of bid approval and projected to be complete within 60 workdays of project starting date. The commissioners also approved the hiring of 2 PRN, that's part-time physical therapists, to work at the physical therapy unit. Quote, we just need to add a couple of physical therapists in PRN positions. They would only be called upon if our volume increases or we have somebody out on vacation. We currently have only 1 open position that is occupied by a full-time therapist that works in another facility, so therefore, when we call, their availability may be very limited. So, if we have 2 more people, that gives us 2 more that we can call when we need, Rodriguez said. Another item on the agenda list for the meeting involved approving a change order for seal coating of roads in Precinct 1. Quote, this is part of the CTF, the grant project. As you can see in the packet, there is a change order to remove a couple of roads and add a road. I think there were some questions about those roads being in the city limits. Is that what the deal was? Questioned Holly. To which Ward County Precinct 1 Commissioner Tino Sanchez replied, yes. The seal coating that was approved concerns Eva Street from Highway 18 South to I Street, or about 1,600 feet. The commissioners approved paying the county bills. In other regular business, the commissioners gave approval of the officers' reports, budget amendments, the treasurer's monthly report, and accepted the minutes of the last meeting. Present for the Monday morning meeting were Precinct 1 Commissioner Tino Sanchez, Precinct 2 Commissioner Larry Hanna, Precinct 3 Commissioner Dexter Nichols, as well as Judge Greg Holly. Precinct 4 Commissioner Eddie Nelms was not present for the meeting. The next commissioners' meeting will be held on Monday, July 8th at 9:30 a.m. in the Ward County Courthouse at 400 South Allen. Individuals who would like to address the court to ask a question or inform commissioners of problems in their precinct or Ward County can call Judge Greg Holly at 432-943-3209, discuss their question or concern, and ask to be placed on the agenda for the next commissioners' meeting. Oil Trail leads to recovery of stolen transformer. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. An oil trail, drag marks, and footprints led Ward County Sheriff's deputies to locate a stolen transformer earlier this month. Deputies were called to a lot located at 700 South Ursula Street on Saturday, June 1st, around 8:02 p.m., in reference to stolen transformers. According to Ward County Sheriff's Office Lieutenant Mark Sanchez, quote, deputies spoke to the lot owner, Kenneth Williams, who said he had two transformers stored on his lot, which had recently been dragged off. The last time the transformers were seen was the day prior, around 6 p.m., end quote. Deputies noticed drag marks across the lot. Quote, the drag marks indicated the transformers had not been loaded onto a trailer, but rather something was tied to the transformer, and it was dragged through the lot and onto the roadway. One of the deputies on scene recalled seeing the oil trail on the road a day prior, Sanchez said. Because the oil trail was still visible on the roadway, the deputies were able to follow the oil trail to an RV lot located at 4th and Arizona Streets. Once at the RV lot, deputies were speaking with the theft suspect, Charla Josephine Calvin, age 42, of 2708 West 4th Street. Quote, the deputies noticed more oil markings and footprints in the dirt driveway, which went off into an empty lot next to the RV lot. Following the footprints, the deputies located what appeared to be a pile of trash at first glance, but upon further inspection, it was one of the transformers buried in the lot, Sanchez said. Calvin admitted to the deputies she used a tie-down strap to secure the transformer to her trunk to drag the transformer off the lot. The transformers were valued at approximately $4,000 each. Based on the evidence and Calvin's confession, deputies were able to secure a warrant for Calvin on June 20th, and she was subsequently arrested and charged with theft of property greater than $2,500, less than $30,000, a state jail felony. Calvin's bond was listed at $10,000, and she posted the bond and was released. Montez, charged after sharing intimate image of ex-girlfriend on Facebook. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. A 40-year-old Monahans man has been charged after he allegedly posted an intimate image of his ex-girlfriend on social media in an act of revenge porn. Officers with the Monahans Police Department were called to 209 East 8th Street on Saturday, June 22nd, around 9:52 p.m., in reference to harassment. According to Lieutenant Xavier Ramon, quote, officers spoke with the complainant, who stated her ex-boyfriend, Ryan Nathan Montez, posted an intimate photo of her on Facebook and also mentioned her in the post, end quote. The victim was able to show officers a screenshot of the Facebook post, which showed the photo in question, Montez's name as the account name, and the victim's name in the post. Quote, we have been dealing with ongoing issues between the victim and Montez for a while, and the post has since been deleted, Ramon added. The so-called revenge porn is a violation of Texas Penal Code 21.16, which prohibits the sharing of intimate images without the subject's consent. Montez was subsequently arrested and charged with publish intimate visual material, a state jail felony. Montez was currently on parole for a previous conviction of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, which has not been revoked. He remains in custody at the Ward County Jail on the parole blue warrant. East Monahans Parkway Highway 18 closure date changes. All four lanes of Monahans East Parkway, which were scheduled to be closed starting on Friday, June 28th, but unforeseen circumstances, the closure has been moved. The closing schedule is now scheduled for Monday, July 8th, and lasting approximately a few days up to a week while Butler Cohen Construction installs utility lines for the new law enforcement center under the roadway. Quote, we have it set now to not interfere with the July 4th activities, Ward County Facility Superintendent Clay Gardner said. Also, TxDOT changed the closure time on the Highway 18 Main Street construction. The closure was supposed to take place on June 24th and 25th, but has been delayed and rescheduled to close on June 28th. Plan your detour route accordingly. City Council moves on properties in violation of city code. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. City Council members met briefly on Tuesday for a relatively short meeting, and after establishing a quorum and approving previous minutes, the group was tasked with approving the monthly departmental reports, a health benefit re-rate, and an agreement for cybersecurity insurance. The council approved Resolution 2024-027, Code Enforcement Officer's Report, regarding properties in violation of city code for either trash or weeds, items in the alleyway, and or dangerous structures. The properties have all been given a first notice and did not comply, so this will allow code enforcement to follow up with a final notice and possibly move forward with court action if needed. Those reported to still be in violation are 611 C Street, owned by Gerardo M. and Susanna Avila, 303 East 7th Street, owned by Monahan's Limited Liability, 305 East 7th Street, owned by Monahan's Limited Liability, 310 South Betty, owned by Chelsea Sherbeck, 611 South Calvin, owned by Tito and Espudo Hernandez, 209 South Gary, owned by Fred and Amparo Lopez, 209 South Kenneth, owned by Pamela and Grissom Suber, 1010 North Eva, owned by AHN Corporation, 208 South Eric, owned by Deborah Burns McDonald, 301 East 7th Street, owned by Monahan's Limited Liability, 1507 South Bruce, owned by Timothy Michael Fuentes. Once a second notice is issued, the property owner has 10 days to comply, or the case could be turned over to Monahan's Municipal Court for further action. In regular business, the council approved a re-rate for the Texas Health Benefits Pool Medial Insurance for City Employees and Elected Officials for the period of October 1, 2024 to September 30, 2025. City Manager Rex Thies said, quote, "There is a 2% increase across the board. 2 years ago, there was a slight decrease in the rate, so this will bring us back to where we were. This is the best plan we can get, which will cover all the employees and get them the health coverage for themselves and their families," end quote. Under the plan, elected officials are treated the same as employees and allowed the same exact insurance as a city employee. In other business, the council approved an interlocal agreement with Texas Municipal League Risk Pool for cyber liability and data breach response coverage. Quote, "The cost for cyber protections and entries who have been defrauded has become costly, and insurance companies are finding they can't afford the protection. TML's board has elected to go with a separate pool of funds and have members to join the fund and build a fund for cyber security," Thies said. "The cost will increase from $247 annually to $1,250, which Thies said was well below cost for any other plans out there currently. In routine matters, the May accounts payable were approved by the council, totaling $906,000. The council will meet again on July 9th in the council chambers of City Hall, located at 112 West 2nd Street at 3 p.m. The meeting is open to the public. The City Council meets every second and fourth Tuesday of the month at 3 p.m. anyone wanting to address the City Council on the topics addressed in the story, or any other topic, may do so by asking to be added to the meeting agenda in the City Secretary's office, located inside City Hall, or by appearing at the meeting during the public comment section of the meeting, which is on every agenda.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.